Hi, Amandine.
Hello. Hi, how are you?
Very well. How are you?
Doing good, thanks.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Thank you so much for joining me, Amandine. Let's just dive straight into it, if that's okay.
Sounds good. Yes.
Perfect. Perfect. And Amandine, first of all, thank you so much for joining me on Startup Chats. It's fantastic to have you with me. As I understand it, admittedly, I don't know a huge amount about you, but I do know that you're involved with AI and some really sort of, sounds like quite cutting edge sort of innovation. So yeah, I can't wait to sort of learn more about you. But just for the audience, why don't you sort of just share with me and them, you know, a bit about yourself and your background? That'd be really, really great.
Sure, my pleasure. So I have been working with early stage startups for now 10 years. I've been especially working with emerging technology startup, and recently I launched my own startup for the first time. So after, you know, working directly with startup founders, I decided to take the leap and launch my own business. So we are building AI bots for esports and competitive video games. So I see your eyebrows raising.
Yeah, definitely. I know my son loves all that sort of stuff. So yeah, fascinating. Fascinating. Yeah.
So that's my main project right now. But also I'm super involved in the startup ecosystem in the UK. So I have been mentoring founders, and also it's interesting. I've actually been on both sides as a mentor, but also as a mentee. But also I've been a VC scout for a fund based in the UK called Bike VC. So as a scout, I am part of their community and I help them find startups, but also review some opportunities. And on the side, I also host a series of live video AMAs where I interview early stage startup founders on the journey and try to show the behind the scene of building a startup.
Fantastic. And I think, you know, that's going to be, I'm sure that's hugely valuable for so many people who probably listen to this podcast. And something, you'll have to share me the link, because I'll definitely have to subscribe and check it out. That'd be fascinating. So, wow. I mean, it sounds like you're involved in so many different areas, your own mentoring, VCs and all sorts. Just sort of roll it back. How did you sort of get into this sector?
That's a very good question. I actually felt into it when I was just 18. So I didn't know much about the startup ecosystem. I was just a student, and I met a startup founder and started being involved in what they were doing. You know, first just having some chat, and then working for the company during the holiday. And then while I was at school, just on the side, doing other Amazing. Missions for them. And so I realized that actually that could maybe be a job. I remember I had this kind of apprenticeship in a larger company, like a big corporation, and I felt so little, so out of the context, out of the room. Like I was here, I was doing my job. It didn't last for very long, but I just thought, okay, that's not where my place is. That's not the environment I need. And so because I had this first experience working within a startup, even if I had zero experience in my life, and you know, there were credits, I couldn't really have anything to say, yeah, just listen to me. But still, I had a place in this room and within the startup. And so I always try to be surrounded by founders and startup after that.
Amazing. And were you sort of coming from a technology sort of background at university, or like creative or marketing, or just a good practical head? You know, where were you coming from?
So I did some studies in international marketing, but I've always worked with very technical people. So over the years, I became quite technical. I am not a developer. I have some foundation. I took some courses, but I'm not a developer at all. I do some side project when I want to learn new things, or when I want to, geek around, but I'm not technical. But I've been working with technical people in technical industries, in new technologies. So, I would say depend what's your preparation and what's the limits between what's technical and what is not.
No, definitely. And I think often, you know, a founder in a tech startup doesn't necessarily have to be the tech bod, if that makes sense. And, you know, I'm certainly not a tech bod and involved with my startup, but you know, you surround yourself with the right people and you learn and you pick up things. So yeah, no, fascinating. So that journey and the reason I want to sort of pick up on this, if that's okay, and talk about that journey is just, I find it really interesting, and I'm sure the audience finds it really interesting to understand, okay, that was a moment when, you know, that opportunity arose, you sort of discovered something that you may have not thought about entering before with that tech startup world. Where did your path sort of take you sort of from that moment, you know, post-university, you know, were you then, did you stay with that company or did you sort of move on and sort of evolve your career?
So my plans has changed a lot over the years. Initially, when I was in school, my plan was to stay in school and finish my degree. And, you know, I come from a background where my family doesn't really go through university, or like I'm one of the few who really decided to go further into academics and you know, just complete full degrees. And so I did the first 2 years, and that's when I started working with the startups. And then I had the opportunity to join a business school, and I didn't fit in at all. Plus lots of stuff happened to me. Like I mentioned the apprenticeship, I actually lost it. I lost the job. And so that means that I lost my ticket to the school, kind of. So I wasn't in the position where I could pay for the school anymore. And so I just took a step back and I rethought my plans, right? So I always wanted to have my master's degree and, you know, complete my studies, but I didn't. And so what happened is that I just continued my license year, and I used the fact that we had an international internship to do, to have like the internship contract and try my chance in the US. So I moved to the US, thanks to this just internship paper, got some jobs there. I managed to stay around for longer. I managed to get a visa for a longer time. And I was there for less than a year. But when I came back, it was actually very hard to know where to go. Like, I've learned a lot when I was there, especially I've learned English. My English was so bad when I moved to the US. And I'd say then it has been always about rethinking, what am I doing? Is it the right place for me? And so when I came back to France, I really needed a job. So I took a job in a kind of startup vibe. I thought it was a startup, but the vibe was more corporate, but it was the side of the startup. And it was in new technologies, which was really the industry I also wanted to get back to. And but what happened really is when I moved to the UK after that, I stayed in this company for about a year. And when I moved to the UK, I really discovered this startup scene. Back then in France, you didn't really have this community aspect. So when I moved to the UK, it was already there. And even if France has managed to come back to the same level, for me, it was very new. And so I really embraced that and I loved it from day one. So my objective was to find a job in a startup and continue working with founders. But I didn't really find the right startup. So what I did is I kind of jumped in and out startups. And what I did for a couple of years was to really join teams at very early stage and help them with everything non-technical. So helping very technical founders with launching a first product, hiring non-technical people, do the first marketing and communication strategy and actions. So everything that really needs some foundation. And then when the company is ready to move to the next step, I hired the right people for that. So I've done that for a while, and then I tried to get into VC. So I know it can be messy when people look back at all my experiences, but there is a trend, there is a line that's all about startups and founders and supporting innovation. So I tried to get into VC, I didn't manage to, and eventually started my own startup.
Amazing, amazing. So let's talk about that. What is the startup called, and where are you at the moment? That'd be really fascinating to sort of learn that.
So we are called Wild Meta. And I would say our stage right now is still quite early. We have been bootstrapping for slightly less than a year. I incorporated the company last December, and my co-founder and I have been full-time since February. So since February, we have been focusing on the core technology. So because we are an AI startup, we have been like the core technology in building the AI component is, well, one of the main aspects, right? So we've been working on that, especially my co-founder, who is, well, doing all the hard work and the technical work.
I'm sure you're working just as hard.
Yes, but it has, I think it has more pressure because the technical element is, well, what changes everything and all our plans. So I just try to work around that. And right now we are preparing for fundraising. So we are going to start fundraising certainly in the coming weeks or months.
So let's talk about the products. That'd be interesting to sort of learn about. What's the premise of it?
So the idea is to build a platform for people to access our technology. And the first game we are targeting is called Dota 2, which is one of the main esports game. And the idea is for people playing this game to log into our platform and access different type of bots to train with. So different level, there will be different, I would say, features where you can specify different type of training. So that's something that we will be working directly with the players to really understand what's key for them. But we already had some hunch and some ideas of what to add there. But so it will be through our platform and they will just launch a game. The difference will be that they will be playing with non-human players.
Okay, so I'm not familiar with the game, so I'll have to definitely look into that. It'd be quite interesting. But is the idea that they sort of train before they go and compete? Is that the idea?
That's kind of the idea. The thing is, right now, for this kind of games, you're playing online with humans, and there are different things. So first thing is, if you want to train, you don't have much options. You just play the game with people playing the game. But training and getting better at the game go through different steps. So sometimes you want to try new strategies, you want to try a new hero, a new character, you want to try things. And if you're playing with people, it's kind of difficult to do that because you need to agree with everyone that you're going to play this specific role in the game, or because you're experimenting and they should be counting on you for this specific thing. And it's very hard because most of the time you don't know the people. And when you have a team, it can help. But then it's still very difficult to improve, really. If you play with your friends, for example, you may really struggle with finding friends who have the same level. The other thing is, with those communities, because everything is online, you have a big problem of toxicity. And so everything goes through the chat, or so either written chat or vocal. And there are lots of toxicity. People insulting you for your accent, because you're a woman, because, I don't know, you choose a specific skin for your hero and people make fun of you. Like, there are many reasons. And so sometimes you just want to play in a safe space. And that is very key for us. So now bots exist already for this game, and most games you have bots to introduce you to the game. But problem is, those bots are good when you're really new to the game. But then when you start understanding the different mechanisms of the game, you can't really use those bots because then they're not smart, they hard code it. So our difference is that we really want to offer bots that really act like humans and play like humans.
It's really interesting, isn't it, the whole gaming world, because I think, you know, I remember many moons ago when I was gaming, there was none of this online, and it was literally you play a story or you play against the computer, and that then it was, you know, you could invite your mate round and you could do two players. So then you were playing against another human. And it definitely seems to me that this, you know, the whole, you know, that has gone a long time ago. That ship sailed a long time ago. But obviously now it's much more online and interactive and playing against other people. And it's interesting, isn't it? It's sort of like going back to the way that maybe you, when you first play a game and you can set the difficulty level yourself and you know, you improve by playing against the computer. So it's almost sort of correct me if I'm wrong, but it's almost like reintroducing the way where we used to play games when we all played against the computer, and improving as we progressed.
Yeah, I think you're touching something in the sense that the way of playing games has evolved a lot, but I would say now it's more focused on the community, and so I don't really think that it changes the way you interact with the game itself, but it's more about how you consume games. And now, you know, you go on Twitch, you follow some streamers, you learn from them. I'm actually right now doing a study with lots of people playing Dota 2, but I think some of those results can also apply to a wider range of players. And everyone is unanimous. They're all watching YouTube and following streamers to get better, to improve, to just enjoy more the game. But what you say about reintroducing bots could be true. I mean, our objective is really to use the latest technology to improve the game and the player's experience. So yes, and right now we are focusing on something very specific. So I'm talking about one game, one platform, but then in the future, our focus is in the technology. So in the future, we want to work directly with studios. We want to make this technology available to more games, and not just you know, to train, but also maybe that could be one day the default for games to have smarter bots.
And like you said, touched on earlier, have that safe place so you can still enjoy the game but not feel intimidated, worried, threatened or anything like that, which is unfortunate. Fantastic. So just to roll it back in terms of your business, so you're in the sort of development phase, presumably, and when do you expect that to sort of be production ready to, I guess, test and try out and things like that?
That's a big question, and I wish I had an answer. And I know I'm going to start talking to more investors in the coming weeks, so I know it's going to be the big question. The thing is, machine learning and AI doesn't really work like software development. So you can't really have a linear progression where you know that if you put X amount of people working for X amount of time, you know that you have a launch date. For us, it's slightly different, and for anyone doing AI, because you know, we could be super close to have amazing results and just few days away, but it will also be a few weeks away, and it's not that linear. So right now we're not really pushing for a specific date, and we don't want to like create too much hype, because we want to reach the stage where we have enough visibility in terms of the core technology to be able to give an approximative date. Yeah. So I would say as soon as we reach this stage where we have core technology that is mature enough that we can plan ahead, then we will be able to start planning ahead our communication, talking to more people. We've already started talking to people and to players directly, but we have tried not to do too much marketing, or it's more about talking about our journey for now and keeping quite a low profile, rather than going right now for our target audience. And I know it can be controversial, because we're building a B2C company, even if there will be a B2B component later on. And everyone says, oh, you need to validate your idea and get traction right now. But the thing is, we know our target audience and players. If you start telling them, we are going to do that, and that's going to work this way and everything, then they will want it in 3 months. Like, you can't expect them to wait more than 6 months, 9 months maybe, before they can see anything.
And then they'll get bored and they'll forget about you, and that initial impact won't be as powerful.
Yeah, and it could be also very negative, because players and people in the gaming community are talking very vocal about what they think about a game, about companies in the space, like Reddit. They're very active online. And so it doesn't make sense for us to push this right now.
No. Are you still, though, do you have a still small group of people that you're sort of getting validation on elements, or do you sort of just try and sort of limit that, or how you're approaching, you know, solving the problems that you're trying to solve?
So right now we're doing a large study. So we started with a small amount of people, talking to a few players here and there. Instead of gathering lots of data, we just really went quite deep into the problem itself with a few amount of players that we knew already. And right now we are the stage two, where we're doing a larger study on a larger amount of players. So I haven't yet put the data together completely, but it's very interesting to see the answers. And so that also helps a lot. And while doing that, we actually come across more and more people who want to keep in touch with us, want to know what the next step. And so Brilliant. Those people will be definitely the people who will be involved in the creation of the platform. So while we still focus on the core technology, it doesn't necessarily make sense to plan to further away the specific features and you know how it's going to work on the platform exactly. Yeah. But we're already building this small community of people who we want to involve in this reflection and in the first testing.
No, that's brilliant. I mean, and again, for anyone who's listening, I think this is definitely part of a pre-launch strategy. You know, this is your user group. This is, you know, you're directly speaking to your, you know, your target audience. You're getting validation. You know, it might not be on mass scale, but you're getting, you know, very nuanced validation that you can feed back to your developer and mold it and bring it forward. And ultimately, I think it's really important, again, for people who are thinking of starting their own business, to, you know, if you can get that cohort of people together that they feel that they've really invested in it and helped, you know, develop it, and their opinions are valued, you know, that's going to be hugely powerful for when you do go to market, you do launch it, because they're going to be your brand ambassadors. They're going to be, you know, sort of wanting to sort of, you know, carry on being involved and its future development. You know, they're going to be super excited, and they're going to feel special ultimately, you know, and that's important.
They can also be your North Star, telling you when you're actually doing something wrong. And that's very important. I've been working with lots of communities, and I've actually worked with the crypto community before. And so I remember how important it was just to have, yes, a large community, but also a smaller community of people who are very straight away with you. And so if you launch a blog post or something, and there will be the people who come to you saying, oh, there is something missing here. Maybe you should have added something about that. Maybe you should start communicating about this thing you announced a few weeks ago. And you know, they are very helpful, and that really helps to have a neutral point of view and a neutral feedback on what you're doing from someone who already knows. Like, it's not just completely neutral in a sense that someone outside of the business completely, because they know a lot about what you do. But in the same time, they don't necessarily... they are not too close to the problem to give you an answer.
And obviously they don't have to be the investors or anybody. They could just be sort of people who want to sort of offer their opinion and offer their help. And we all need that. If, you know, we need to speak to our community to understand the problems we're trying to solve. Now, from a practical level, I sort of gather from what you're saying, you're almost talking about two layers of, you know, a community that's highly engaged with your launch. One is that smaller, closer community, and one is a slightly bigger one. From a practical level, what sort of numbers, and again, for other people who may be thinking about this themselves, what sort of numbers would that practically look like? I mean, would it be one, you know, an audience of one or two for that small one, or would it have to be more like 10 or 50 or 100?
Well, I think it depends on how you engage them, and if they have to be very active, the way you're communicating with them. From experience, I'd say maybe 5-6 people would be enough. One is too small for sure. One or two is too small, because yeah, it could be one personal opinion. But as soon as you have maybe 3, 4, 5, 6 people, that's good. And also, not everyone is available, and you know, everyone has their own life. You can't just rely on a few people to tell you and to give you feedback. So it's good to have different people, so you can kind of bother someone for 5 minutes here, another one for 5 minutes there, and it's also more fair.
No, definitely, definitely. So do you are you starting to think about your go-to market strategy? And if so, I know that's hard because you don't know the timings and things like that. But what's the sort of thought process in terms of, you know, your sort of when you know you're not putting yourself under time pressure for, you know, the product development, but when you know that's pretty much there, I imagine you're going to start ramping up that, you know, that excitement, that anticipation, that pre-launch strategy that you think, right, come on, let's get some, you know, on, I don't know, March the 1st, we're launching, come on guys, you know, mm-hmm. you know, what's that? Have you started to think about that sort of step?
Yes, we have. Well, as I said, I'm the non-technical founder. So that's the kind of thing I've been working on over the past few months. So our focus is definitely on the community. And when I talk about the community, I don't just talk about our own community. I talk about the gaming community. So it's an industry that is very community focused and more. And it's also like esports and video games is getting more mainstream. There is more interest from a wider pool of people. And so when planning ahead, you can think of the usual marketing techniques and can imagine, oh, we put lots of money into ads and everything. But we need to take in consideration all the time the community and where the people are. And so I think we're quite lucky that we are evolving in such environments because we can ask people, we can get survey, we can have feedback, and people are very vocal. So I mentioned a study that we're doing, and initially, I wanted to do this larger study earlier because I wanted to have like validation on the idea. But then I started thinking, if I wait a little bit in the same time as I validate this idea and I get this data, I can also gather data on what works and what doesn't in terms of marketing channels and where they are. I can include that in the survey, and that's what I did. So I still need to go all into all the data, but this should help us. And interestingly, we can think, oh, we need to do some PR. Well, actually, the gaming community doesn't win that much news, like publications, but they love YouTube, they love Reddit. And so that would be our focus. And rather than spending money on lots of ads, there will be some ads, but not that much. We want to focus on streamers and smaller communities. There are already some communities around the game we're starting with. If we can do events with them, if we can take part of competitions, maybe it could be fun. We could imagine having a competition with AI as participants. You know, we can imagine many interesting things. So that's what we want to do, not just do the traditional marketing, because that doesn't necessarily fit completely with our audience, but really target and really put ourselves in the shoes of the players.
Perfect. So it's very much diving into that influencer sort of community and getting those sort of key people on board and having fun and, you know, around that and competitions and things. Fantastic. And just going back slightly, I don't know if I missed it, but I'm certainly intrigued to sort of learn. How did you sort of distribute that sort of questionnaire on and when you wanted to get that sort of insights? How did that happen?
Well, I started doing it. I started posting it on different groups, on different mix between Facebook groups, Reddit subreddits, some WhatsApp groups, some also Discord. Discord is very good for the gaming community. The hard thing is like it's like WhatsApp. The hard thing is to find the groups, right, and to be accepted in. But I shared it here and there. We got a bunch of answers, but then I realized that I wanted more, because this group were a good way of getting in touch with the moderators, getting in touch with the specific communities, but it wasn't necessarily reaching that many people. So what I did is just yesterday I did I used Prolific, which is a platform for researchers and academics. I already used the platform as a candidate, as someone who fills out the surveys. And I started using the platform for the first time as someone who conducts a survey. So we're still on it. First one went really well. I had to do a pre-screening. The second one, I had some technical issues. So finger crossed, it won't affect our data. Otherwise, we will need to launch another one. And I'm in touch with the support because I had, yeah, some technical issues. But this has been super helpful so far. And we managed to very quickly had a bunch of people just to answer our questions.
Fantastic. I'm not familiar with Prolific. I'm definitely intrigued to sort of learn more.
It's a UK-based startup. I think they've been part of YC and maybe another program. So it's a startup. I remember reading about them in the news. I was already a user, but I read about them in the news recently. I think they're based in Cambridge, maybe. So really UK-based team.
Fantastic. I think ultimately, well, you know, it's, and we talk about this a lot just generally, that, you know, the opportunity now that the digital world gives us, whether it's on the social platforms, to create communities and get validation for your ideas and your products, and it is just phenomenal and has never been like this. You know, that opportunity, you know, market research before was so timely and costly and all the rest of it, and it's just really sort of almost democratized that whole process and made it so much cheaper, which is just phenomenal. And I think, you know, figuring out where your audience is and how you communicate with them and how you get to them and how you reach them and how you can get your messages across is a process of a bit of a trial and error. You know, like you said, you tried this, you tried that, but, you know, it wasn't quite, you know, and it was that, it's that sort of journey. And I think obviously, you know, it's all, everyone's startups and it's going to be slightly different because the audiences are going to be different where people hang out. But I think that's a really good lesson for people to take on board, again, where they're thinking about, you know, pre-launch strategy, validation, how do I get validation? You know, it's so different to the old world, and it's just phenomenal. It's so phenomenal.
And it's also very different from one company to another. So what 100%. Worked for one company because of their target audience is going to be completely different from another startup. Even if they have a similar technology, if the target audience is very different, it may be a completely different approach. So it's something, you know, the startup ecosystem, now everyone is sharing their thoughts and their journey, and that's interesting, but everyone should just take that, keep it somewhere in their mind, but also put in consideration that it's not necessarily how it's going to work with their own business. And that's okay. You know, you don't have to compare yourself to another company because your journey is going to be unique and very different. So you have just to think, what can I take from that, apply to my company, and what do I reject from what I've just learned?
And that's what's so exciting about the startup world. That is, you know, it's constantly problem solving, overcoming challenges and obstacles, and pivoting and just keep being, you know, motivated to keep moving forward. 100%. So again, just we talking about the pre-launch sort of planning. Obviously, you know, we're starting to get, you know, that audience and starting to engage them. Have you, and with the influencers. Is there gonna, I guess maybe launch parties, or I don't know, what, any other thoughts, or do you have to even think about engaging the gaming platforms? Are you just focusing on this one game, or are you starting to sort of think about others?
So to start with, for the launch, we will definitely be focused on just one game. It require work to adapt our technology to another game. And also there is a, so that's a discussion I had many times. We don't want to hack games to get access to the data. And so we choose Dota 2 because it gives access to an API and to replays and everything. But then we want to have an open discussion with the studios, and we don't want to be like, oh, we're going to do that with this game and no one knows. Yeah. And, you know, we really want to be transparent on everything. Yeah. So first we're just going to launch on this game, and then we will start the discussion with studios and professionals. But fantastic. Then we will be completely open. Like we don't have a strict strategy in terms of how we're going to work with influencers. And I think the more we're going to interact with our testers and you know, the first feedback we have, the better we understand who exactly are the key people to talk to. And also we are getting more and more involved in the startup, not in the startup, in the gaming ecosystem. So we know about the startup scene. Now we're deep diving into the gaming scene, and it's fascinating. People are very open, very happy to talk and to spend some time just having a quick chat. And so this has been amazing so far. So in terms of influencers, I think our strategy will be defined later on. And also, I think the best way sometimes is just to work also with agencies. I mean, it's a real job to work with influencers. So I'm definitely open to the idea just to kickstart the conversation with them, because there are many of them. And it's not just about talking to the big names, but also to the small streamers who have their own community. It's all about talking to people who are passionate about the game.
Absolutely. The micro influencers.
Yeah. And 100%. Then, you know, you create your own community, and within the platform, we already have a bunch of ideas to get people to invite their friends, and also for small influencers to invite their own community, benefit from that. So there are lots of very interesting mechanism to put in place then.
Yeah, this is interesting, isn't it? It's when you start thinking about how the product itself can actually market itself. What do they call it? Sort of network marketing, you sort of have that engagement and, you know, sharing and encouraging to share. Mm-hmm. What was the classic was a Dropbox, you know, share to your friends and you get more data. So again, so are you very much thinking about that within your product development, making it sort of almost viral?
I don't know if it's really about making it viral, but let's say it's about giving the opportunity for people to, to connect between our technology and our platform and the community and have this shared experience. Like, there are some platforms that I love and I think are doing a great job at that, and I want to promote them. Nothing to do with gaming necessarily. And like my coffee subscription, I regularly do some posts about it on Twitter and share my link, just not because I want to get the £5 off, but because I love what they're doing and I know that they are reliable. And I think that's something that's happened more and more, especially right now. You have so many tools, so many things you can find on Google. Like, you Google a problem and you have so many companies that just pop up. Like, how do you just find your way around that? And so I found that people are more and more vocal about what they like, what they don't like. And I do that a lot on social media. So it's not just about, you know, going viral or not. It's more about being involved in everyone's life today, relying a lot on the community aspect. And now kind of everyone has their own community. You don't need to be an influencer to have your own community. So that's just important to be able to vet or share what you like and what you don't.
It's almost that whole network effect, isn't it? Sort of, you talk to your friend, I talk to my friend. I mean, it's social media or steroids in the sense of it's just word of mouth and recommendation. And I think that's the power, isn't it?
So true, yes.
No, definitely. So, wow, so exciting. Very, can't wait to sort of, you know, watch you guys and see where you go with it. It's, very exciting. Hopefully loads of interesting sort of points and lessons for our, you know, community and listeners to sort of pick up on and maybe think about for themselves. Is there any, like, you know, maybe a tip or two that you could sort of maybe share with people who are sort of starting out on this journey, you know, maybe to think about?
I would say, as I said before, think about what works with your own business. You don't necessarily need to fit a box. You don't necessarily need to do like everyone else has been doing. So try to think about your own narrative and what it means for you. And then you can work the narrative around that. Like, if you think about doing something to please investors, for example, because it will help you raise money later on, it's not the way it works. It should be the opposite. You're doing something because you believe that's the best for your company. And then if investors or anyone asks you about it, you can defend your position because there is a reason for that, rather than just, oh, I've just done like everyone else. And the other thing is, be sure to reach out to other founders. I've been talking to lots of founders through my live video streams, but also through different programs I have been involved in. And sometimes you register to some events online and that's great. You learn a lot from the speakers. You can even ask your own questions. But sometimes it's also just good to hear from other founders what they've been through, how they did that. And if you have a specific ask, you know, if you don't just add someone on LinkedIn without it putting any message, if you have a specific ask, you can connect with anyone, especially startups that are at the same stage as you are, or slightly more advanced, and feel free to ask them about how they did this or that, because that's super valuable and way much better than a blog post from someone you have no idea what they're up to that did it 10 years ago and is based in the other part of the world.
Yeah, definitely. Amandine, that's amazing. Thank you so much for sharing that great insight. And definitely, I'm sure that's going to provide tons of value for everyone. Amandine, like I said, thank you so much. For everyone who's listening, please definitely, keep an eye out. I don't know if you guys got socials or things like that yet.
We do, but I am more active on my own Twitter account. Like, my Twitter account is always tweeting. The company account is just here for now. Like, there. It exists.
That's all right. You could be early followers, you know, just keep an eye on you.
Yes. I think we may have something like a dozen of followers. So you will be one of the first one. And I guess if you see our logo popping somewhere, sometime, someday, you will know that, yes, we're starting communicating.
That sounds good. Yeah, definitely. Well, I'll get the links and put it in the description for the podcast, definitely. Well, Amandine, listen, thank you so much. Listen, guys, hope you all enjoy the podcast. Hope you got tons of value from it. And we'll catch up soon.
Thanks for having me.
Amandine, thank you so much. Brilliant. Thank you. That's brilliant. I'm sure you've got lots to be getting on with today. So I'll say goodbye. But no, it's been really, really lovely sort of chatting to you.
Thanks. Yeah, it has been fun and very interesting questions. So very stimulating. Thanks.
Oh, good. Well, we'll have to do it again. And, so we'll see how, when things are progressing. Let me know when, you're sort of production ready and you're about to sort of go into your launch. That'd be really interesting to maybe sort of jump on another podcast. And
I think we're connected. We may be connected on LinkedIn.
I think so.
If we connected somewhere, you'll know the day we launch, because right now it's we really are low profile. But the day we launch, yeah, it will be all over my personal social media, and I share a lot. So
brilliant. No, definitely. Well, listen, you take care. Good luck with it, and look forward to catching up soon.
Thanks a lot, and let me know when the episode is up. I'd be happy to share. And thanks for having me.
Yeah, brilliant. All right, you take care.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.